This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Walk Wai Wai, the international LGBT news and current affairs show. Every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
Good evening, it's World Wide Wave time, Joy's international news and current affairs show, especially for the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight in the studio, joined by Tom.
Hello.
Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Damien's here too.
Hi.
And my name is Matt. Now, back in 1985, at the height of the AIDS epidemic, gay men were dying and blood was found to be one of the conduits of the disease. Immediately, bans were put in place around the globe on gay men donating blood. Like Australia, the USA currently has a 12-month period without sex before a gay man can donate. But one young man is fighting that ban.
How did Australia influence the US policy on blood donations?
In what way did the Orlando shooting influence this policy debate?
And could you last a year without sex of any kind? This Valentine's Day, we're talking about not having sex. In order to make an appointment, a 21-year-old American took a year off sex so he could not only donate blood but also raise the profile of the discriminatory policy. Telling his story tonight is Jay Franzone, Director of Communications at the National Gay Blood Drive in USA. And here's a taste of what we got coming up tonight.
He's a straight man, and a straight man can have unprotected sex with as many partners as they want, as long as they're female, and no matter what the risk is. So he can have oral, anal, or vaginal sex with as many people as he wants and give blood. But I, as a gay man, I can't get a blowjob.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
Kicking off tonight over in Russia, where the European Court of Human Rights has fined Russia for blocking a pride parade in St. Petersburg.
About bloody time.
Indeed. St. Petersburg is actually Melbourne's sister city. And we've talked about this particular city before. The activists, local activists there, have had a win and been awarded €27,500 due to this discriminatory policy and the local government's refusal to allow them to hold St. Petersburg Pride. They basically wanted to hold a march. They were thinking there'd be 500 or 600 people that would come along. The city's security department refused the initial request because they said it would cause too much obstruction. They then changed the application twice to go on different routes that would, provide less obstruction, but they too were deemed, quote, unsuitable. However, The very same day, on the very same route that was proposed, the United Russia's Young Guard, this is a very conservative group, was allowed to run their own parade or march, which, quote, supported family and traditional values.
Yes, we know what those kind of family values are all about.
Indeed. So the court has ruled against them. This is not the first time that the activists have taken the government to court. Back in 2011, they also applied to have a pride parade. It was struck down in similar fashion. One of the activists, Gavrikov, said that whilst they're looking forward to getting the money, they don't expect any big changes from this ruling in Russia.
Over in the UK, a recent study has found that 40% of LGBTI people in London suffer from mental health issues. Now, this is 15% higher than the general population.
And very high, just 40%. That's freaky.
The report states that without specialist support, LGBT people will continue to experience mental health inequality, stigma and discrimination.
I think this story is particularly pertinent because if
this is happening in the UK, so presumably it's white homosexual men. So it's kind of, you know, where it's already been happening for a while. If it's still having issues in a place like UK, it just paints the picture for the rest of the world how bad it could be.
And it's also based in London, which has the largest gay population in the UK.
So they're estimating the number of LGBTI people in London is around 800,000. And the report also showed that one in six LGBTI people also experience homophobic, biphobic or transphobic hate crimes at some point in their life. And this is London.
And this is London. The Health Committee has called on the Mayor of London to actually do more. Let's see if he does.
And now over to Nepal, where for the first time ever in Nepal's history, transgender people have sat the civil service exam. Those vying for government jobs in Nepal must sit civil service exams run by the Public Service Commission, or PSC for short. The PSC reported for the 2015-16 financial year, 651 transgender people sat the exam after the gender options were changed to include male, female and other. The government opening doors to allow transgenders to join the civil service is a positive decision. It is a matter of providing equal opportunity to all citizens.
Interestingly, now, Nepal seems to have this, I won't say quite love-hate relationship, but there are times when they've been really, really progressive and certainly ahead of the region in LGBTI rights, and then other times when they've stepped right back. There seems to be a real internal battle going on in Nepal for some of these basic rights.
And now, it's not known how many of the 651 transgender people were successful in securing a job because not all of the exam results had been released. It's a good start, but more could be done.
Interestingly, the government there reserves 45% of civil service seats for disadvantaged groups, which includes women, Dalits, ethnic minorities, Indigenous people and the disabled. Now, in brief, in Italy, activists are firing up to advocate for gay unions.
Germany's Next Top Model casts two trans contestants.
In USA, I Am Jazz transgender doll to debut at New York City Toy Fair.
And in Lebanon, a court rules that homosexuality is not a crime, but you can still be prosecuted for it.
And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, this is Robin Tyler, and I am a producer, I'm an activist, I'm a comic, and I'm also legally married to my wife, Diane Olson, for over 7 years. On the World Wide Wave.
We have actually got a love message in. 317, thank you so much. Roses are red, violets are blue. Human rights are always fun because of great people like you. Thanks, World Wide Wave.
The check's in the post.
That's indeed. Actually, another one in on Facebook. Responding to the story during the week about faxes being sent to Australian politicians about marriage equality, Hoffler says, who uses fax machines these days? Oh yes, Australian politicians, of course.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
We are talking all things to do with blood and blood donations tonight, which alludes to our guest who, as we mentioned before, took a year off sex in order to donate blood, which are the requirements in the US of A. I thought we'd give you a few facts around USA's blood donation system. So it's controlled by the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, and they put a complete ban in place on donations from men who have ever had sex with men in 1985. This was during the early days of the AIDS epidemic, and I guess there wasn't too much information around in terms of transmission and all those sorts of things. So since then, obviously, testing has become more routine.
In December 2015, so not that long ago, the FDA revised their recommendation, allowing gay men to donate blood, but only if they've been abstained, celibate, for 12 months.
The rationale for the one-year absence period, according to the FDA, is that tests do not pick up recent infections. A standard test that looks for an immune response to HIV can find infections after about a 25-day window.
Now, as it's been pointed out, and we'll find out more tonight, there's obviously some holes in this policy. It rules out gay men in monogamous relationships. It still allows heterosexual men or women who have multiple sexual partners and riskier behaviour.
The FDA current policy puts the US in line with other countries like Great Britain, New Zealand, Sweden, and here. But elsewhere, such as in Italy, Mexico, and Poland, blood banks have moved from a blanket ban on men who have sex with men to individual sexual risk assessments.
Now, this is basically a detailed questionnaire about how risky your sexual behaviour is, and then based on that risk is how they determine whether blood can be donated or not.
Now, the irony is that in Australia, they still screen the same way. So they still ask you all those questions, but they make the determination blanket. So it's a little bit weird that they ask you those things and then don't get any more detail. They go, well, any of those things put you in the wrong basket.
Indeed, it's one of those long-standing discriminations that seems to have just sat there unaddressed. But as you will hear momentarily, our guest has a different way of addressing it. You're on Worldwide Wave.
This is Ryan Reed from the International Gay Rodeo Association, saddling up with Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Jay Franzone works for the National Gay Blood Drive to advocate for change in this policy. And to raise the profile of the issue, he knew he had to do something, well, drastic. We asked Jay how the idea came about to take a year off without sex in order to donate blood.
Yeah, so it's pretty funny. It honestly started with the policy being implemented after a year of bureaucracy. In late 2014, early 2015, the policy said, they said, you know, we'll have this implemented over the next year. A three-month dry spell turned into something more when I met my now ex-boyfriend, Ben. And, you know, we were supposed to have a hookup. It obviously wasn't a hookup. And we went to this TED talk on healthcare and on medicine. And so this hookup turned into a date. And he was wondering, he asked me, how did you get a ticket? Because it was sold out. And I got tickets because I've worked on this policy and I know all the, I know a lot of the medical and health folks in Boston where we were both going to school. Make a long story short, he learns about my work, learns I'd been absent for a few months on a dry spell and how I had kind of toyed in my head with the idea of staying absent for a year. And just encouraged me to keep going with it and see what would happen. And he just said, you know, what's a few more nights? What's a few more nights of not having sex and seeing where things lead?
Or 9 more months, actually. You are a young gay man. You're in your sexual prime, and I guess gay culture is fairly sex-charged in itself. How did your friends react to this plan?
I guess, you know, you don't really talk about having sex all the time. Like, to my friends, it's never like, oh yeah, I totally got laid last night, bro. Like it was never like that. So this didn't really get big until I casually mentioned it to a reporter after Ben and I had been dating for nearly a month or two. And the reporter, you know, immediately kind of realized how big of a story this could be. And from there, it you know, we talked about what this would look like. Is that they would he would do a write up, but I expected this to come out much later in the year. So my friends responded really after the Orlando massacre in June and after my story came out. My story was pushed up, actually, and published sooner than I had expected because of the Orlando massacre. And it obviously went viral. I was covered in the U.S. extensively and around the world because of the Orlando massacre. And it highlighted this policy beautifully. It, you know, really, I don't think there was an American who was paying attention to the news that week that didn't hear at some point that gay and bisexual men were banned from giving blood. And that's really important.
Jay Franzone from America's National Gay Blood Drive on how the Orlando shooting at Pulse nightclub took the blood donation ban for gay men to a national audience. Coming up, Jay tells us about the backlash from the gay community and the impact of President Trump. You're on Worldwide Wave.
Hi, this is Patrick Smith, International Mr. Leather on Worldwide Wave.
It's the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time, one joy. And another message came in, 317. We love the way you think because you asked us how this new administration, the Trump administration, might significantly influence this law change. And we anticipated this question. We asked that of our guest tonight. But you can message in your thoughts and questions on this issue and maybe even how it affects us here in Australia. Or if you just want to send us a love message, we're happy with all of those things.
Jay was explaining about some good that actually came from the Orlando massacre, in that it raised the profile of the issue of gay men not being able to donate blood. We asked Jay if it also raised the issue to prominence within the gay community.
You know, I think it definitely has raised the profile within the gay community. But initially, I got some kickback. I had a lot of people giving me some backlash and saying, hey, why are you milking this? Why are you milking a tragic mass shooting of your own community of LGBT people to make a name for yourself? And that really wasn't it at all. And so I had to, you know, talk to a few influential people in the LGBT community who I know and just say, hey, I need you to kind of help me with this and explain that I had started this obviously in January. This was going to go public much later in the year when it was a slow news day. It was going to be just kind of pushed out on a slow news day. But because of Orlando, it was pushed out in the middle of a spiked news cycle. And so at first, you know, I got some very initial kickback, but then afterwards, I was able to be quite successful and quite supported by everyone. It's definitely been interesting where I would get, my DMs were open on Twitter, and I'd get some DMs of people saying, like, they want to be the first guy I had sex with, and I was getting some dudes, and I also got some people that are just kind of like, dude, what the hell are you doing? This is insane. There's no way you can do this. And I, you know, I took that all in stride. I took that as a challenge to highlight this policy even further and to go through with this. Because I knew if I did this, if I gave blood, I'd focus more on the policy and less on myself. And I feel like I've been able to do that.
Prior to Orlando, do you think that gay guys understood? Do you think they cared about the statement you were trying to make?
That's a really tough question, Matt. I don't know if I can say whether or not they did care. I think most people respected what I was doing because they wanted this policy to change. Because obviously, it's not based on risk. It's based on overarching fear that gay equals HIV, which you and I both know isn't true. But, you know, I think because of this year and because of Orlando, people were able to look at this even further and say, okay, yeah, this is a little crazier. We do need to find some way to make things work.
So let's talk about the policy then at the moment. So USA actually followed Australia in putting in place this 12-month abstinence rule before giving blood. Why do you say this policy is wrong?
You know, the policy is wrong because it isn't based on risk. And so you have it's funny, I had my best friend Connor actually travel with me when I was doing my media tour in Manhattan. And we were talking, and he's a straight man, and a straight man can have unprotected sex with as many partners as they want, as long as they're female, and no matter what the risk is. So he could have oral, anal, or vaginal sex with as many people as he wants and give blood. But I, as a gay man, I can't get a blowjob. And there's inherently a massive difference in risk in receiving a blowjob and penetrative anal sex without protection, bottoming without a condom. And so I think you look at this and you say, okay, there's something wrong here when a straight guy can do all of this and give blood when a gay guy can't get a blowjob and give blood. There are inherent risk differences, and those need to be highlighted and dealt with on an individual basis, not with a broad brush.
This ban has been in place since 1985, which, you know, at the time, that was the height of the AIDS epidemic. Given the devastating effects of AIDS at the time, and I guess everybody's desire that it not go further, do you think the gay community just accepted this?
Number one, the gay community doesn't know it exists. Number two, you know, we were fighting for things like marriage, because at first we wanted to be able to, get married and adopt kids. While that is important, and I'm not discounting that at all, this is completely different. This is about saving lives. This is a science issue, but, you know, marriage is kind of more of a social, legal issue, which depends obviously on religion and state law, et cetera. It's super complex and nuanced, where this is a science issue, which should be pretty clear cut. And I think a lot of the scientists
and the doctors that make these policies, I think they're a little blinded. They have their blinders on. They were working based on their age and based on when they got their degree. More than likely, they were working in the HIV/AIDS clinics when the AIDS HIV outbreaks were happening. So they saw firsthand how detrimental HIV can be without treatment. And I think they still see it as a death sentence, where as now we know HIV is a treatable condition. While we don't want anyone to get HIV through a blood transfusion, we see how it's a significantly, you know, less of a risk. It's less of a life hindrance, where now you can live before you would just die.
What are the politics of making a change in policy like this? And I'm thinking in the context of you've just come from a very pro-LGBT administration under President Obama and gone to an administration that is certainly showing signs of being the opposite under President Trump. Sorry, but...
don't even say it, yeah. We gotta say President Trump out loud. You know, and the way that we handle that is we say that, you know, this, we can continue to push this policy by saying, this is a scientifically based policy. We can't be basing our health policy decisions based on politics, based on opinion, or based on what we think is going to happen. We need facts. We need science. And the science, as seen in Italy and Spain, among other nations, says that we can change our policy and our blood supply will get safer. It's just like there's no other way around it. The science shows that these other countries are doing this individual risk-based analysis and their blood supply is getting safer. So why can't we do it? We can't do it because of bigotry and because of fear. And we really just can't be playing politics with our blood supply, despite President Trump. This policy should still change.
That's Jay Franzone, the young American who has taken a year off sex in order to be allowed to donate blood in the USA. We've got a bit more coming up from Jay. I thought it was interesting, and we've covered Orlando a couple of times, and actually at the time we did ask this question around blood donations because it was a very significant issue. Often when you get these massive tragedies, the way people give back is by giving blood.
Because they had queues around the block.
They had, absolutely. For days they had queues there. And, you know, even here in Melbourne with the Bourke Street tragedy, again, that was a way that people... There's always a spike in blood donations after these things. And I think it's really significant that...
The people that are actually affected couldn't actually give blood.
Absolutely. So that's a painful experience for the gay community, but equally... There's some sort of hope that out of such a tragedy, you know, it has raised the profile, it has brought it to the attention of people who otherwise wouldn't have known.
I thought it was a bit sad, though, that he was getting comments from the gay, the LGBT community that they thought he was trying to profit out of the tragedy at Orlando.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to raise the profile of an issue.
Grief's a funny thing, though, doesn't it? It's not a logical thing. It's all about emotion and... If you think something's getting in the way of that emotion and that grieving.
And people deal with grief at different times. So maybe the people that had issue with him hadn't actually got onto the next stage of grieving. Maybe they were still...
Indeed. And also, I think maybe there's something there about this being a bit of a forgotten discrimination. I think maybe we've just become so used to not... So used to being excluded from blood donation that it's just become the norm.
And we don't bother.
And we're therefore there's no advocacy
interested.
For it. It's just the way it is.
Do you think that's true, though? Because I know that the Australian Red Cross recently took it to our governing body, which is the Therapeutic Goods Administration, proposing that they actually reduce that 12-month window. So it's not something we've stuck in the drawer, in the back drawer, you know. It's
not stuck in the drawer, but there's not too many people advocating for it. There's no rallies. There's no, I don't know, is there a Facebook group or, you know,
activism? I don't remember it being on the Pride March.
Yeah, so it just certainly doesn't have the profile. And I take his point that, you know, when you're fighting for things like same-sex marriage, then it can overtake other issues, but the issues are no less important is really what he's saying. I mean, look, even though from a personal point of view, every now and then at work there's a call for who wants to go down and a group of people at work will go down and give blood. I can't do that.
You can, you just can't do much.
I can go along for the ride and I can try and get a biscuit.
Moral support.
But be the cheese got in
you that. Can actually go and lie. Not that we're proposing that, but that is what some people
that
could do.
Necessarily helps
I don't think that's a
the situation.
Particularly good thing to do, especially since you sign a document which they can take you to court on and end up in prisons. And I don't think we're going to be doing World Wide Wave from prison.
But it does raise the point that the criteria that throws people out is easily you can get around it, with a few ticks of the box.
There's actually I can't go for two reasons, because I was in the UK between the mad cow disease.
That explains a lot.
Thank you, Matt. Yes.
I do like his consistency in saying that this is a science issue. Now, it hasn't worked on things like climate change necessarily, but I think keeping on pushing that, trying to take the emotion out of this issue.
But I'm confused.
And
you think it is a science issue?
Yeah, like, the science says. And
the statistics say.
Yeah, but there's countries that have already gone through this process who have moved to a risk-based assessment, and there's been no change at all in HIV transmission.
We already use a risk-based assessment. It just doesn't extend to homosexuality, but everything else is obviously a risk-based assessment. So,
no, but for gay men, it goes beyond that, because regardless of your risk, for 12 months after you've had sex, you cannot give blood. So it doesn't matter what risk you've had, because you are gay. And exactly the point he was making, he has a straight friend who could go out and do all sorts of risky behaviours, walk in and give blood, and he's ticked the boxes. He hasn't lied. It's just the policy that's there. Interesting. We'd love to hear your thoughts, because this does directly affect us here in Australia as well. So we're mirroring what is going on in the US in terms of the need for change. We've got more of Jay coming up very shortly.
Hi, this is Jane Ward, author of the book Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men, speaking from Los Angeles on the World Wide Wave.
Now, some more messages coming in, which is fantastic. James, thank you very much for bringing this to our attention, because you are 100% right. Hello, team. Would be nice to hear affirmation that the blood ban doesn't just affect gay men, but bisexual men and their female partners too. You are 100% correct. They fall into the same boat in terms of this discriminatory policy, both here and in America. 317's come through with a slogan for this campaign. Obviously, the momentum's already building here in Australia. It's bloody annoying when you can't save lives. Don't discriminate. We love it.
Well, going back to Jay Franzone, by day, Jay works as a communications director for the National Gay Blood Drive. We asked Jay to explain a bit about the organisation and what it does.
The National Gay Blood Drive is an advocacy organization. You know, we're really focused on education and educating about this policy. And so we do that through hosting blood drives. And so we had 2 years of blood drives, and then things kind of hit the fan and the policy changed, because no one knew what the policy was. And so back in 2014, we had 61 blood drives on the same day, where gay and bisexual men were allies to donating blood in their place. So we're showing the FDA, here are 1,500 donors. We could have collected 3,000 units of blood if gay and bisexual men, the people who brought these donors, could have given blood themselves too. And so really highlighting how much gay people want to give blood, but also educating that this policy still exists as a kind of remnant from the HIV/AIDS crisis. And now we're waiting until all the blood donation centers across the U.S. are up in line and running with a one-year ban to be able to organize our next national event.
Now, just finally, I'm not going to ask you about your first sexual experience after a year off. However, I would like to ask you about your first experience of giving blood. Can you tell us what that felt like?
You know, my first time giving blood was pretty amazing. I was treated like every other donor, and I learned very quickly that they treat all the donors with the utmost appreciation and utmost thanks, which they deserve, because, you know, you think about it, these donors, we're relying on a very, very small population of blood donors for the entire country. Only, I think it's only 34% of the country is eligible to give blood. and only 10% of that 34% actually does. We're relying on, 3.4% of the population for our entire national blood supply. And the Blood Donation Center staff were incredibly kind and generous. I was nervous as all hell. I didn't know what I was wearing. I was really freaking out about how I looked. I had, you go to give blood, you don't normally have a six-person camera crew following you. but once I got on the chair, I just kind of relaxed. And they stuck the needle in my arm. The unit filled up. And it was a pretty fast procedure. It's about 10, 15 minutes. And then I stayed there for about 15 minutes because they kept bringing out more cookies for me to have and more Gatorade. And, I couldn't say no to more cookies and Gatorade. So I just kind of stayed there for a while. But it was great. It was easy. And I'm really appreciative kind of for the whole process. They really treat the donors well. And I think if anyone can take anything away from my story, it's that this policy needs a change. And anyone who can give blood should give blood.
And if cookies and Gatorade is all it takes, you're a cheap date.
Yeah. don't tell my boyfriend that.
Jay Fanzone from the National Gay Blood Drive speaking to us from New York. Thanks for joining us on Worldwide Wave.
Thanks for having me.
He's such a he's quite an inspiration. Certainly put his money where his mouth is, so to speak. Could you do it yourself? Could you take a year off without sex?
Oh, there's been years. 1 year, God, that's easy.
I guess that's true. Depending on what your habits are, then giving blood might just be a breeze. But it is interesting though. Around the world, there is huge variability in the way different countries treat blood donations by gay men.
Even neighbouring ones. So you've got like Argentina, where there is no ban, and you've got Peru with no ban, but then you've got Brazil with the one-year ban, and even like Norway.
Norway really surprised me as being very progressive in terms of LGBT rights.
But it's an
that one has an indefinite ban for gay men, still.
But then it's Sweden next door is 1 year. So you just pop over the border and give it there.
And give it there. Why not? Well, you have to hold off for a year first,
I guess. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Or 6 months if you're in Japan.
Well, you could just hop around the world if you're really dedicated to giving blood. A couple of messages coming in. So a bit of action on Facebook, actually. We put up some a story off BuzzFeed, which is photos of trans people sharing their own stories and getting a bit of traction. Lots of likes and shares. W3Joy on Facebook is our Facebook page, and we post all sorts of news stories throughout the week from around the world to keep you informed. You are on Worldwide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, this is Jessica Stern from Outright Action International, and we work to bring visibility to the struggles of and discrimination facing lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex people all across the globe on Worldwide Wave.
A big thank you, and we tip our hat to you. Jay Franzone, the Director of Communications at the National Gay Blood Drive in the USA. You can find out more about their work at gayblooddrive.com.
We'd like to thank all the messages we got through on Facebook. Sabrina, Michael, Ryan, Joe, and heaps more that joined us on Facebook. That's W3Joy. And not forgetting all the SMSs and emails we've had coming in from James, and also the donation from Michelle. Go, Michelle.
And, of course, thanks to our podcaster, Mark, where you can listen to our podcast on iTunes. And, of course, on the front desk, the Gallant Gordon.
What's some Valentine's Day music to take us out?
Oh, we're going out with a local chappie, Anthony Clear. You may have heard of him. With It Hurts So Bad.
We'll catch you next week on Worldwide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from Worldwide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. Worldwide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/Worldwide Wave, or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
LGBT. Australia's most amazing gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.